Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. I'm visiting with Colonel Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps retired, the author of When China Attacks, A Warning to America. What is the goal? What is the mission statement for Xi Jinping, now the strong man of Asia, having extended his supremacy into a third term, unprecedented since the Maoist revolution and the death of Mao in 76. It's called Document 9. Grant tells me that it dates from right away, early days of Xi Jinping's strongman position. What does it say? What is its goal, Grant?
Well, ultimately, it describes China's main enemy, which is American ideas, Western ideas, these ideas about freedom and individual liberty, all the things that we take for granted and consider really the foundation of our systems. And he describes these as the enemy that's to be destroyed. And one of the sort of ironic and somewhat depressing aspects of this is when she gave this speech, it was in Chinese, it didn't get much attention at all. And this was around 2013 when he had really solidified his control. And the Western press was publishing articles saying that Xi was really a reformer secretly. Once he got his position solidified, he was then going to ease up and we were going to see a very different China. So while the Western media, which doesn't deserve a passing grade for its coverage of China over the years, by and large, but when they're saying Xi's a liberator, at the same time, he's giving this speech to the people that matter in China saying, this is our enemy, these Western ideas, and we are going to attack them and we're going to win.
I can remember the report early on in his time as a supremo that the military officers, senior military officers, were told to get rid of their sports cars. I remember reporting that because it seemed so odd that they would have them to begin with and that she worried about it. I also remember him making remarks about, even if it kills me, I'm going to do this. We were wondering, what is he talking about? Is there a threat against his life? Is there coup talk? That was early days. It quickly manufactured itself into a Navy, an Army, an Air Force, a Marine Corps, a Space Force, all pointed to the goal of Document 9, which is to replace the U.S. as the supreme master of the planet, according to China. So let's go to the geography. You're very clear in your presentation that China has an advantage in the home waters inside the first island chain, especially in and around the South China Sea, which is a point of much contention because of all the shipping that flows through it. So right now they're prepared to fight inside the first island chain only, or are they building to penetrate the second island chain? Where are they in their development, Grant?
Well, they have de facto control of the South China Sea. That's been the case for about 6-7 years now. And anytime the Americans go in to the South China Sea, yes, they can go wherever they want, but they're shadowed by Chinese ships. If the Chinese want to, they can deploy 10 ships for every one the Americans put out in there. And also, don't forget land-based and air-based anti-ship missiles from the Chinese mainland, a very close shot. The Chinese dominate it, and they can pretty much operate more or less freely within that so-called first island chain. But the Chinese are building up their hard military power in terms of ship numbers, aircraft capabilities, or just outright capabilities, and also their ability to project power, and that's to deploy force beyond your borders, well beyond globally. And they're setting up the infrastructure to do that around the world via a string of ports and airfields, allegedly for just commercial interests. But they are also giving the military, say, long-range air transports and developing a Navy, which is able to operate far afield as they have been doing for years in the Middle East. So they're figuring it out and gradually are being able to expand their reach. But also when we talk about the military power, at the same time, this political power and the commercial power, which the Chinese see as just as much a weapon as the People's Liberation Army, that's everywhere. And if you look into the Pacific Islands, where Chinese political warfare, economic encroachment, and political and psychological domination even has set up, that it you can see that they have actually gotten beyond the first island chain, but in terms of sort of sheer military power, a projecting power is still a challenge for them. But play this out 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and we will see a very different China and very different Chinese military that's operating in all parts of the world.
The map, look at your maps at home. The first island chain starts in Japan. It can extend to South Korea if those two countries work together. Goes through the Philippines, heads towards Indonesia. Inside that is the South China Sea. And in the South China Sea are shoals or very small islands that have been built up and fortified by the Chinese over these last 10 years of Xi Jinping's supremacy. Also, the Philippines. Look at where Subic Bay is. That was a U.S. base until it was removed in the early 90s. Were they aware of what they were doing? Did they see ahead that you were inviting the Chinese to press their advantage? I don't know, but it is suspicious. Palawan Island. See that? The shore of the South China Sea. The U.S. intends to go back to Palawan Island. We have a mutual defense pact with the Philippines. But recently, the Chinese have been probing off of Palawan Island, ramming most recently, hectoring, harassing, intimidating the Filipinos. Is that suggestive to you, Grant, that our intention to go back to Palawan Island threatens them? Is that why they're doing this?
Well, they would do it anyway, even if we weren't there. They don't like the fact that we're moving back into the Philippines to a larger extent than has been the case. They don't like that, and they never like when the Americans or any neighbor does what's necessary to defend themselves. But China is constantly expanding, sort of applying pressure, and they would be doing the same thing, regardless of the Americans being there. But also I would note that you could see what was coming as early as the late 1980s or 70s, actually, when the Chinese took some Vietnamese islands in the South China Sea, up in the northern end, and then in the 80s took some more Vietnamese territory. In the 90s, they took some Philippine islands as well. And that was after Subic Bay had been given back. But it's been a gradual sort of expansion. And then suddenly it really picked up speed in the 2000s into the 2010s. And as noted earlier, the Chinese telegraph their punches, but their enemy has been predisposed to believe the enemy that they call the enemy, which is us, has been predisposed to think, well, there's nothing to see here. They're not a threat. This classic threat deflation that has been going on for so many years. And while we were saying the Chinese is just a misguided sort of child who didn't know what they were doing, they were glad to have us think that. And they went on the biggest, fastest military buildup since World War II by any country, I would suggest, in human history.
Things that go boom. We'll do that very quickly. Grant writes that it's not going to be an attack on the U.S. mainland. It's not going to be Pearl Harbor. What it's going to be is Taiwan. And what does Taiwan look like? Taiwan looks like an overwhelming force, perhaps three divisions. Grant writes they can airlift three divisions and sea lift three divisions. And then your move, USA, and that becomes the dodgy part. Are Americans going to commit themselves to blood and treasure for an island they've never visited? An island of great worth if you're making high-end chips. TSMC is there, but otherwise unknown to the United States. Japan says it will commit itself. The Philippines are participating in the understanding that they're a defensive line against China. But I believe, Grant, you believe that you make the case that within the first 24, 48 hours, there'll be calls for ceasefire, and China's counting on that. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, I can see that that sort of dynamic playing out, that if China does hit Taiwan really hard and manages to isolate it and then quietly passes the word to the Americans, or even not so quietly, well, look, this is a domestic matter. You stay out, or it is nuclear war. It's World War III. Stay out, America. And there'll be a lot of people who don't want to stand back and let 23 million Taiwanese be enslaved. But you can imagine Wall Street and the U.S. business class. Remember those standing ovations in San Francisco, them calling up the White House saying, we can't afford a war. This is going to upset the economy, de-escalate. And that has been sort of really the mindset of most administrations until the Trump administration came along, is to de-escalate. So pressure on the U.S. administration to just let Taiwan go quietly, yes, complain and make expressions of profound concern, but let it go. There's nothing that can be done. I can see that playing out. It doesn't have to, but it is certainly a scenario. And looking at how administrations have behaved in the past, considering the, say, the American political dynamic, I don't think that's far-fetched. We have to think through what we're going to do and to be able to respond as well. In terms of the Pearl Harbor scenario, what I would see, however, is so-called fifth column activity in the U.S., say, using drones to simply go down the flight line at, say, U.S. Air Force bases and take it out. Also, you do have to wonder about all of the Chinese ships in U.S. ports, particularly given the Chinese missile-in-a-box technology, which is putting an anti-ship missile in a shipping container, and just deploy a few of these. And you can whittle down U.S. capabilities pretty quickly with a little bit of imagination. So we have to be careful about that as well. But I think Taiwan is the likely sort of point at which a fight is going to come from a Chinese perspective. Now, if you take Taiwan, it's very useful militarily, but think of the political effect. You have demonstrated that the United States military couldn't save 23 million people from enslavement. U.S. economic and financial pressure couldn't do it, and nuclear weapons couldn't either. I think you'd find overnight Asia turns red as everyone cuts the best deal they can with Beijing. And worldwide, people will have some real doubts about U.S. promises of protection. So this is a very attractive target for Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party.
The book is When China Attacks. Colonel Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps, retired as the author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.